You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome back to another Dog Band Radio. I'm Scott Eklund, sitting here with Chris Fetters. Kim Grinnolds has the night off, and we just wrapped up day five of UW Spring Football Camp. And basically, Chris and I are just going to kind of break down what we saw. A lot of stuff from the offense today.
Yeah.
Let's just talk about, first of all, we didn't practice in the stadium. First time that they've had it just on the East Field today.
Yeah, it was all in the East Field. It was, again, kind of similar, blustery, cold, kind of, I don't know if it's atypical for spring. I mean, usually springs aren't necessarily that warm here, but
we're not used to doing it this late in the day.
It also feels unseasonably cold, yes, because we're usually doing the morning, so that's a good point. I would say they kind of broke up in terms of the team periods and stuff. Really, when they got together on the 11-on-11 sessions, they really broke it down between goal line type stuff and then in the middle of the field, like second and third down type conversions. And so I thought that a couple of the wide receivers really stood out in some of those moments. Guys like Denzel Boston, I think, again, he has been the rock star of that group so far this spring. I don't think there's been any question. Mm-hmm. I think Jeremiah Hunter, even though he is in the second group, typically when they come out to play, he has really risen above, and I think he's starting to join Denzel Boston in terms of the guys that have really stood out. And then defensively, in the middle of the field, I think there were some guys, definitely, whether it was the full team session or some of the Skelly sessions, like the 7-on-7 or 1-on-1 sessions, Thaddeus Dixon had a pick. I think Leroy Bryant may have had a pick early on the other side of the field. It was hard to tell. Because being down on the field, mm-hmm. it's hard to tell the depth perception. Yep. It was either a pass defense or a pick. But then Devon Banks, you know, last spring, right, he was a total ball hawk. You know, he came up picks almost every practice, came up with two big picks today.
And we hadn't seen much from him until Monday or Tuesday's practice.
Well, and it's funny because I think someone on the message board kind of asked about him. And we were like, yeah, I mean, he's there. He's doing what he's doing. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden they ask, and he delivers with two picks. And then I thought Peyton Waters had one of the plays of the practice for the defense. He read the eyes perfectly of the quarterback, caught it in stride right around the 10-yard line, I think. Could have maybe taken the distance. I don't know. You know, he was going. And so I thought that was a phenomenal play. So I think I think there was a lot of give and take. It was hard to tell because the situations at the offensive and defensive lines, they're letting a lot of things through. And so they're letting the quarterbacks have probably a lot more free rein than maybe they normally would under mm-hmm. regular pressure situations. So it was kind of hard to tell whether or not Will Rogers or Damon Williams had really good days. I think they had kind of mixed days with the picks and everything like that. But it was a really productive practice. Mm-hmm. And then if you look at, like, the tackles, for instance, you mentioned to me you saw Khalid Tafai had to go out early. Didn't look like he was feeling very good. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, those three tackles, you got Drew Azzopardi, you got Soan Fa'asolo, and you've got Elijah Jacquette. I mean, those guys were playing both sides. They were playing first string, second string. I mean, mm-hmm. those three guys had to rotate for all four in the two deeps of those tackle spots. And so they got a ton of turns today,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, they did, yeah. And you know, Azzopardi looks like he's kind of feeling like he seems to be a little more comfortable. And Fa'asolo, I'll tell you what, you know, he's a strange looking lineman from the standpoint that a lot of linemen, when they get up to 6'5", 6'6", 6'7", a lot of those guys are more leg than torso, right? But Soane Fa'asolo has a long torso, which is a little different. And so you watch him go out there and play. He doesn't look out of place. I expect him to be more of a right tackle, but he's been playing left tackle quite a bit. He doesn't look out of place. Looks like he belongs. He just needs another year of getting stronger and doing and working on his technique and everything like that. But overall, I felt like he has looked pretty good. Elijah Jacquette, on the other hand, is a high-waisted guy. He's got those long arms. He, to me, looks like another guy who absolutely needs another year in the weight room, another year of just learning how to play the position and the nuances of doing things. But overall, I think, you know, if they're able to bring in a guy like Marcus Bryant, who's going to be in for his official visit this weekend from SMU, if they can bring in two tackles from the portal and maybe a couple inside guys, that would give these guys another year to kind of just sit and learn, maybe get reps here and there when needed. But overall, I thought this was the best day offensively, and a big reason why was because the offensive line did a lot better than they had been.
Yeah, and again, it looked like they were kind of part piece in it. And when I say that, it looked like they were actually only looking at like the left side doing pass pro on like one rep, and then they move it to the right side. So they'd literally hike the ball, and like the one side that wasn't involved in the play would almost like go to a knee,
mm-hmm.
which is new to me. I hadn't really seen that
before.
That was a different type of drill for Brennan Carroll that I hadn't really seen before.
If they've done that before, they've literally just had the center, guard, and tackle on the side that they're working on.
Right.
They
just stand there.
Or you just stand there. Yeah, yeah. It's weird. I don't want to say it's weird bad. It's just different than what we've seen.
Yeah, because these guys have just a different flavor for how they like to do things. They're kind of – they all have their same general approach to how they do things, but just with a little slight tweak here and there, and that's all the difference. I would say the two things that really stood out for me on the offensive line today was that, first of all, the more I see Drew as a party, especially at right tackle, you can see why he played right tackle at San Diego State. He just looks like a better player on the right side, and that's probably just familiarity. He's probably just used to playing on that side, and that's where he does his best work. So I don't know if he would be a true left tackle if they needed him this fall. It certainly looks like they could absolutely use him in that role if they had to go there. But I still think the jury is out in terms of who is going to be the starting left tackle this fall.
I don't think the starting left tackle is on the team right now, personally.
I think that's a fair assumption. And then the other thing that I saw today, too, and I hate to be a broken record about it because I think they are improving, but you look at Zachary Henning, you look at Michael Watkins, the true freshman, you look at Parker Cross, the walk-on from Seattle Prep. All three of those guys are getting better and better. There's less balls on the ground in terms of the snaps or whatnot. But when a guy like Landon Hatchett comes in just for the skelly, just for the 7-on-7.
So and no contact.
He's hiking. He's got no pads on, no helmet, no nothing. And he just looks, that's how you do it.
Mm-hmm.
And he just looks like you would expect the starting center to look.
Yeah.
And I know it's harsh on the other guys because they're learning their guts out and they're trying as hard as they can. But when the guy has been prepped for a year and he learned under a guy like Parker Brailsford, for instance, and he just kind of understands it intuitively, you can see the difference between a guy like that and the rest of the guys.
Let's talk about the secondary. We talk about the receivers having a good day. We talked about the interceptions that some of the guys had. But overall, did you think that the secondary play was are there any guys sticking out? How about that? Are there any guys that are sticking out to you?
I forgot, too. Jordan Shaw had another pick.
Yeah.
He has been – I would say he's been kind of the ball hawk. So if they did like the – I know Jimmy Lake back in the day used to have best in the room, best hands in the room. I think he might have the best hands in the room right now in terms of number of picks.
Like three or four.
He's got a number of them. It seems like he comes up with at least one every practice. So I think he's been strong. It feels, again, like they're still – you know, if you're talking about John Richardson, the corner and slot coach, and Vinny Sinceri, the safeties coach, it still feels like they're working on kind of who should fit where, especially at the corners, because Jordan Shaw played slot at Indiana, but he's definitely playing out on the edges here so far. But I think he's also played some slot too. So he's played a little bit of both. You know, Dyson McCutcheon looks like he was pretty rock solid the first handful of practices in the slot. I think that they've tried some other guys there, like maybe a Leroy Bryant or some other players. So it's interesting, just kind of moving it around, mix and match, see kind of who works. I think all of them have had moments. I mean, Curly Reed had a couple of really good moments today in terms of just knocking a ball down near the goal line, things like that. Prysock, it's interesting. You would think Prysock would just be the most dominant guy and the most experienced guy, 6'4", athletic, rangy, long levers. And he's all that. He is all that. But he is just kind of one of the group right now. He is just one of the group because he's out there learning everything they want to do.
Well, it's a new defense.
Just like they want to do. Exactly. Yeah. So he's out there doing his thing. Same with Elijah Jackson. He's out there doing his thing. But
Thaddeus Dixon had a pick today.
Thaddeus Dixon had a pick. And, but if I had to label it two deeps right now at the corner with the slot, it's just – You know, I do think that Prysock and Jackson, at least they started out that way. I think Shaw is right in the mix there. It's just hard to know, mm-hmm. really. I mean, Devon Banks, again, came on like gangbusters yeah. today. So he had a really good day. So it's hard to judge it. Now, at the safety spot, it feels like it's a little bit more solidified in the two deeps because you got Cam Fab and Mikella Steen really kind of locking it down to start. And then they're kind of backing it up with Dunn. And also the true freshman again, Peyton Waters. Yeah. You talk about a high-waisted kid. He just looks like an athlete all the way.
Yeah.
I mean, all the way. Yeah. And the play that he made today was fantastic. I just think he continues to just show little leaps and bounds. Not by much, but just a little bit every day. He just looks better and better.
Yeah, one guy that has kind of stuck out to me only because I really didn't know what to expect. I mean, when he was coming out of high school, I was pretty excited about him. But then I didn't see very much of him because he just didn't play that much. But Leroy Bryan, I think, has looked really good this spring.
He's looked great.
I wouldn't say he's the surprise of spring, but I do know that from some people on the inside of things and in the rooms and everything that they think that he's a guy who could potentially start this year. Now, that doesn't mean he will. Just means he's got that potential and that ability. You know, if Washington goes out and gets another corner in the portal and then they've got Elijah Jackson, they've got Thaddeus Dixon and Jordan Shaw, it's going to be really hard to find a starting spot among that group of five, plus yourself at Leroy Bryan at six. And then Devon Banks, you throw him in the mix too.
And Curly Reed.
And Curly Reed. I mean, I think Leroy Bryan's ahead of Curly Reed. And if you're wondering about Caleb Presley, he's just working on the side right now, guys. Yeah. That's why we're not talking about him. But you know, you got Elias Johnson who's going to be coming in. Don't they? And they have Raheem Wright who's going to be coming in as well in the summer. He's more of a slot. Safety.
That's what makes me wonder whether or not they'll actually look for a DB or a corner, I guess, specifically in the portal.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder, safety maybe, but corner? I mean, they got a lot of bodies at corner now, and I think a lot of those guys are really competing at a high level right now.
Yeah, so, you know, Chris, the running backs, you know, they aren't getting a lot of room to run, partly because of the struggles of the offensive line. Defensive line definitely has a more dominant players up front. We talked to Sebastian Valdez today. That'll be posted here probably tomorrow or Saturday, one of those two. But we also talked to Zach Durfee and Jason Calfusi. But, you know, you watch the running backs. I did see Jonah Coleman break off a decent-sized run today.
Yeah.
I did see Adam Muhammad get a lot of carries again. Daniel Nagata got a few carries today. But watching Jonah Coleman, I mean, he defies logic to me physically because he just doesn't look like he's going to be able to run very fast. And maybe he isn't running that fast, but he sure looks like it on the field. And
yeah, I was going to say, during that early team period where it was like a goal line type period, red zone, inside kind of inside the five, he made it out to the corner and scored. So he shows little bursts. And I don't think he'll play at 225, honestly, Scott, this fall. I think he's just getting into football shape, and he's going to continue to get into football shape. I think he would probably play at 220, legit, and be really and be where he needs to be speed-wise and everything else. But obviously with Tybo being out now, and Cameron Davis and Sam Adams are kind of working half in, half out. Like in the team periods, they're not involved. Individual periods, they're doing all the work. I suspect they'll be 100% in the fall. Shouldn't be an issue. Why? But really, it really limits them now. You're talking about Jonah Coleman. You're talking about Daniel Ngata. And you're talking about the true freshman, Adam Muhammad. And Adam Muhammad, another kind of high-waisted-ish type athlete who just looks the part. And again, just has flashes where here and there it's like, ooh, you could see in a year when he gets bigger, stronger, faster, what he could be.
If you guys don't know about Adam Muhammad, I mean, I did do a opposing view of him. He's from the same high school that Michael Watkins is from. They're former teammates in high school, coming up, went to Arizona first together, now UW. But, I mean, the guy rushed for like 2,300 yards his senior season.
Yeah.
This is a guy who is a productive tailback. Now, it wasn't at the highest level. And they were at a smaller school that played up, I think. It wasn't a big school or anything like that. It's out of Glendale. It's called Apollo High School. But you just watch him and you're like, how did this guy only have like, you know, five or six offers? How did Michael Watkins have only two? And one of those was Arizona. So, I mean, I just don't understand how these guys got overlooked, especially in a state that's a relative recruiting hotbed out here on the West Coast.
Well, Glendale's a big town. Yeah. And a suburb of Phoenix. It just makes you wonder if Apollo just hasn't been traditionally a talent hotbed, you know what I mean, of the Glendale schools, so to speak. So you just don't know. I mean, just not living down there and not knowing, it's hard to know. It's really hard to know. But the one thing you do notice, at least over the years, and it's a good indicator, especially if you're wondering why a player only has a certain number of offers given their film or just what you've seen in person, have the local schools offered.
Yeah.
And the fact that Arizona had offered both those kids was a good sign. I don't remember if Arizona State offered both of them.
They did not.
Yeah. So it just don't know. This might be, it's just eye of the beholder type stuff, Scott. Yeah. You just don't know.
Sometimes it's really weird the way recruiting goes for some of these guys. Some of these guys get hardly any offers. Then they go on to become pros, you know, guys in the NFL. So it's really weird.
Introducing the two-way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the two-way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the two-way for yourself at newbalance.com.
I want to flip focus. We've kind of analyzed what happened in practice today. I want to talk about what's going to be happening on Monday next week. I mean, we don't need to go super in depth because
before we do that, should we talk about who are you expecting to see on Saturday?
As far as recruiting is concerned? Okay. Well,
because that's going to lead into
how
Monday's going to start turning out.
So actually the guy arrives later tonight, is Raiden Vines Bright. He's a 2025, recruit out of IMG, wide receiver. His is actually going to be the first official visit of the 2025 cycle. Okay. I'm not counting portal guys. Okay. I'm talking strictly on high school guys that are going to be 2025 graduates. And he is the first one that's going to be up here. And the feeling is really high that Washington is in great shape with him right now. So he was supposed to come up on May 31st. That has been changed to this weekend. He arrives tonight. He'll be on campus all day Friday, all day Saturday, and then fly home on Sunday.
So the sense is he pushed the visit up. It's a good thing.
He didn't push it up. So he was going to come up for an unofficial visit and then take his official in May.
Okay.
And it sounds like both of them just talked to each other and were like, why don't we just make this the official visit? And to me, that could mean that UW feels very strongly that if we get him up here for an official visit, we show him everything, show him all the love, do all the stuff,
press on him.
Then we can get him in the boat instead of show him a lot when he's up here, but maybe not roll out the red carpet for him on a unofficial visit and then hope 6 weeks later he comes back and doesn't commit to USC, who he had a visit with scheduled. And then he's supposed to go somewhere else next weekend. I'm trying to remember off the top of my – I can't remember off the top of my head where he's going. But, you know, Washington wanted to get him in the boat. And if they can get him in the boat on this visit, who knows? You know, I mean, he's a really talented kid with a lot of offers from a lot of big-time schools. But those are the two so he's the first high school official visitor, but then they have an official visitor for the second straight weekend from the portal – and that is Marcus Bryant. Last week it was Philip Blitty, the D tackle out of Indiana. This weekend, tomorrow, Marcus Bryant, SMU offensive tackle, will be here. He is a grad transfer, so he has one to play one. He is 6'8", 310, 320,
assuming
whatever it was.
He's a left tackle?
Yes. Okay. I think, let's just say, their dreams come true and they're able to get Bryant. He probably slides in at left tackle. That pushes as a party over to right tackle. And now you've got two experienced starters. Granted, as a party only started six or seven games for San Diego State, but at least you got some starts in there.
Right.
And then you can turn your focus to the interior guys like the guards in the center.
Right.
So those are the two official visitors. But then John Mills is going to be here. He's a offensive line target.
2025
out of Northern California. I just confirmed that Julian McMahon, the commit out of California. Yeah. He's going to be on campus this weekend. Okay. So that's one. I already mentioned John Mills. I thought there was one more that Omar Khan is coming up on it. And I said that was only two official visitors. He's actually the third official visitor. He will be up. He gets to take a second official visit to the University of Washington because of the coaching change.
And why wouldn't you?
Yeah. Why, hey, if you can do it, great.
Especially when you're coming from a place like Houston.
Yeah, exactly. So, and then Paul Mankey, he is a commit from Texas as well. He's not coming this weekend, but he's working on setting up an official visit for later this month.
Now, if I read some of the things he was posting on Twitter/X, whatever it is, it sounds like he's in the middle of his track season.
Yes, right now. Yes, he's got a commit or a commitment this weekend to track meet. Yeah. So that's why he won't be coming up this weekend. So, but anyway, that kind of leads into what's going to be happening on Monday, and that is the transfer portal opens again. Now, guys have already started to announce that they're going to be going into the portal. I don't know why they do that. I guess it's just to give the lead up to, because schools aren't technically allowed to talk to them until the 15th. Because that's when they're officially in the portal, unless they're a grad transfer. But so, you know, Washington is going to be in the market for 4 or 5 offensive linemen. We've set it at 4. You've set it at 4.5. I said 4 is the over-under that I'm going for. I think we're all in agreement. The Huskies need to find more offensive linemen. And I don't think that has passed the coaching staff by. I think they know that they need 4 or 5 offensive linemen. They're also looking at some defensive linemen, at least 2. We'll get you guys some names when the portal opens and stuff. But guys, we've heard that the Huskies likely will be looking at that point. You're probably going to see a wide receiver if they can find the right one. 1 or 2 tight ends. Possibly.
Yeah, tight end's going to be big.
Yeah,
they're
probably looking at another corner. They're probably looking at at least 1 safety, if not 2. Yeah. We'll go from there. Not sure on linebacker. We'll see where things go with that. And then as far as quarterback, I don't expect them to take a quarterback. I think if they can keep Demaryius Davis, Damon Williams, and Will Rogers, and I don't expect any of those guys to leave. I don't bring this up for any other reason, just to say they're not looking really for anybody. But right. I mean, I think if somebody came along and said, "Hey, I'm willing to sit out a year or redshirt, and then be your guy for next year," you know, to face off with Williams and Davis for the starting gig,
right,
then maybe they bring him in. I don't know, but I expect 1 running back with the loss of Tybo. I think we're expecting a running back here pretty soon, probably at some point very soon. Trying to think. No, maybe 1 edge guy.
Yeah, I was going to say with quarterback. I mean, obviously in an ideal world,
yeah,
Will Rogers plays the entire season like Michael Penix did, and then you have your backup play in the 4 games,
mm-hmm.
but as a mop-up. If you get some mop-up opportunities, you give those opportunities to Damon Williams and let him go to town, or even split them between Williams and mm-hmm. Davis to give Marmar a couple opportunities too, yeah, if you can do it. Because the whole point is you want to try to keep those guys under wraps as much as possible.
From some people I've talked to inside the program, there isn't an expectation of a mass exodus from the University of Washington as far as guys entering the portal from the University of Washington. But they did admit that there could be 2 or 3 guys that, yeah, hey, they might surprise us. We know that, you know, and a lot of that's not going to be because they don't like the coaching staff or anything like that. It's merely, I want to play, and I don't see the opportunity to play here.
Yeah.
But from what it sounds like, they're trying to keep everybody in the fold.
I think just college football fans in general, Scott, should be prepared for absolute carnage.
Man.
It's going to be a bloodbath. And the only reason why Washington probably won't suffer as much as maybe some of these other teams out there is because they've already suffered
through
a
it.
Ton.
Yeah.
Their carnage and their bloodbath happened when the coaching change happened, mm-hmm. and everyone went in the portal and there was all that mayhem. Well, like you said, there might be some trickle-on effects based on, okay, what did they see in spring? Did they see the writing on the wall? Yada, yada, yada. You know, what's going on with them personally? Or maybe they're getting hints that they should move on and find another option. So there's always that. That's always going to happen. But it's just very difficult in the portal situation now, because the portal opens up Monday, but they're not even going to be halfway, or they're going to be right around halfway through spring ball. And it's like, well, how much can you judge your future in 2024 for this fall based on 6-7 practices? Mm-hmm. It's very, very difficult to know. And so
I still don't understand why the window didn't start till like early May. I don't get that.
Yeah. What I don't understand is that, well, in the, it's tough because spring practices aren't mandated for a certain period of time. So you have this wide array of times that started anywhere from, you know, early March to now going into May for Washington. And it's basically like south to north.
Mm.
Because the north teams obviously want to wait until it's as warm as possible. Mm. The south teams want it to try to stay away from the really intense hot seasons, you know, and those things. And so it's just really hard to mandate. And so let's say the NCAA said, well, we won't start the portal until the very last practice of the last team that's doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now all of a sudden you might have a team down in the South, like in the SEC, that hasn't been practicing for a month and a half. What do they do? They're just sitting on their hands doing whatever. Yeah. So I can understand the frustrations all the way around. They were never going to be able to appeal to everyone. Well, you got
132 schools or whatever. Correct. It is
so it's always difficult. So the downside is you're going to have players in the middle of this thing at Washington wondering what their futures are going to be like, and they've only got 2 weeks to decide what they're going to do. But the upside is for all the players looking at Washington that want to come in, they're going to be able to see practices. They're going to be able to talk to the coaches and the players, get a bird's eye firsthand view on what it's like Philip Blitty, for instance. Oh, he just happened to meet Bill Belichick when he was on campus. He just happened to meet Danny Shelton when he was on campus. So a lot of these guys are going to get these opportunities. You mentioned today, Jack Del Rio was at practice. That's just crazy. I mean, it's like these guys are just showing up, and there's this NFL professional element to it that may have been around a little bit with the last staff, but now it's like this staff is just going all out. They're using every contact they have in the book to like to show how you can get from the college level to the pro level, and they're bringing everyone.
All right, well, let's wrap this up. Okay. You got to catch a flight.
I have to catch a flight tonight, and it's going to be a long one, but. You know, I just think that it was another really productive day. I mean, I think they've been really good about their reps. Mm-hmm. They haven't been cheating. They haven't been standing around doing stuff. I think they've done a really, really good job of just getting out there and getting after it. Still haven't really seen a ton of live work. Didn't really have any live work today. Mm-hmm. And again, like you said, the entire practice out in the East Field, that was unusual.
For this staff, at least. And someone noted that the last full practice on the East Field was Jimmy Lake.
Yeah.
Jimmy Lake was the one that did
that. But again, Jed Fish said, you know, playing in Husky Stadium should be considered sacred ground. I think most Washington fans would agree with that, but they also understand there's some size constraints and some, you know, they're a little landlocked.
Well, especially if you're going to have open practices to the people.
Right.
Some people got a little bit of a welcome to being on the sidelines of a football field because a player went over and yacked right in front of them.
Oh, yeah. That'll happen.
That will happen. And I mean, when I say right in front of them, literally where the fence was that the fans were leaning up against, it was right next to that.
Yeah.
So, but no, I agree. I fully agree with you. It was a good day of practice. It was nice to see the offense do a little bit more.
Yeah.
It was nice to see Will Rogers make some nice throws. Damon Williams make some nice throws.
And given the situations they were put in, it was nice for them to see some success.
Yeah.
Like those goal line situations, you'd expect them to have some success. That's where, you know, we're posting on the live thread, and it's like, do-do-do, touchdown, do-do-do, touchdown, do-do-do, and everyone's probably going, God, the offense is doing it. Well, yeah, they're starting at, like, the three-yard line. So but you want to give them some confidence. But
there was that one to James Robinson where he takes a little hitch pass, makes two guys miss, and is off to the races for a 80-ish, 75-yard touchdown, whatever it is. And Jeremiah Hunter, I think, had the play of the Pratt camp so far with that diving 45, 50-yard catch.
Yeah, that was a great contested catch. Was that Bryant? He was up against Bryant on that one. Maybe?
I don't. You were up.
I was talking to Jeremiah Hunter's grandmother.
Oh, okay.
At the time,
I was standing on the other side of the field, so I couldn't see what's going. People don't understand. They want when they're in Husky Stadium, yeah, you have a much easier chance of seeing what happened because we're sitting up high. It's meant for us to see.
Yeah.
East Field.
I have to go up in the stands because, yeah, I wouldn't stand a chance. Yeah. I would never be able to see anything.
Well, you know, and the players, the offensive players will, because they slowly work their way out.
Yeah.
So I'm like practically back in the back of the East Field end zone, you know, trying to watch what's going on. So I did not see the number who it was against, but I know Bryant was being tested a lot.
And today, Hunter also had a 3rd and 16 play that he converted, yeah, that was really, really nice on the other side, on the,
yeah,
near side.
Yeah.
And that was really good too. So I think he's probably just getting comfortable.
Yep.
You know, fifth practice. He's probably finally getting into the, yep, the rhythm and the kind of the sync of being around and getting used to it and all that stuff. And, you know, I mean, these guys are going to classes and they're doing all that stuff too. So that always plays a part in it. So I see a lot more guys getting comfortable today, but I also saw a lot of give and take given the situations, mm-hmm, that they had between the offense and defense. So I think that's good. I think the offense started to come back a little bit. I think the defense overall still is ahead of the offense far, especially when you look in the trenches.
Yeah. So we're going to wrap it up. Saturday is the next practice. 11:30 is the start. It's supposed to be a really nice day, so hopefully there will be a decent crowd of people out there, and hopefully we're in the stadium so that we can actually – not be all crowded out on each other and everything like that. But and as far as recruiting is concerned, there's going to be some breaking news here over the next, I'd say 24 to 96 hours, you know, 4 days. I think you could see a lot of movement, not just in the portal, but also guys that are ready to announce and make some plays. So we're going to have you guys covered door wall to wall on that. I'm all over it. Chris is going to be visiting somebody down south, his dad and everything, but he'll be working still.
Yeah,
Kim, it's a working vacation. Kim will be doing what Kim does, which honestly, we don't see a lot of what Kim does, but things run smoothly because of the things he does. So, yep. But thanks for tuning in, and we look forward to talking to you guys again on Saturday. Go Dogs.
Survivor 46 is here, and so is On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast, and we have a twist this season. The winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares, will be joining us every week.
We're going behind the scenes of the biggest moments, the how and the why things happen, and the strategy and analysis you can only get from someone like me, a Survivor winner.
Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.